Welcome if you're joining us for the first time.
Welcome. We're here. We're feeling silly. It's a beautiful sunny day. We're ready to get spooked.
Finally ready to actually record.
We have hours left before we're due to have this done.
Explanation. We changed what we were talking about this week yesterday.
And by we, Ailey means Ailey. I don't really get a say in it.
We decided to change what we were talking about.
We did.
You did. The research that I had already done all went out the window. Because now we're talking about something else.
Yep. This is an Ailey classic. Along with, I don't know if this is going to be long enough. 2 hours later, it was long enough.
So yeah, that's the state of affairs here.
That's what's going today on at GSPHQ.
It's been mental. I haven't had the best time. Wait, I love the story, but...
You got it done.
I did. And we now have a mini-series in the works for you guys.
Yes, we do.
Once the season is over, before season 4.
A little summer treat, which we're going to organise at some point. We're not sure when yet. We'll get some dates before the season finishes.
Date to be announced.
Date TBD.
But if you are genuinely new, this is the Genuinely Spooky podcast.
Yes, it is. We're Ailey and Kieran. That's
he's,
Ailey.
He's Ailey.
I'm Kieran. I'm confused.
It's going to be a silly episode this week. Feeling silly. The sun's out.
I hope you know. I hope it's not too serious an episode.
There are serious moments. This is kind of an interesting episode because it's a blend of history and myth and folklore all kind of blended together.
That's fun. Excuse me. This is quite an uninteresting episode. No. We are going to talk about the history of the potato.
Hey, that would be an interesting episode.
Maybe.
Scottish potato famine.
Mm-hmm. I mean, we did an episode about a bridge and that was amazing. That's one of my favourite episodes.
You do enjoy that episode.
I did.
You said that a few times now.
The Tay Bridge disaster. So, you know, if anyone could pull together an episode on a potato, the potato, it's you.
Thank you. That's one of the nicest things you've ever said to me.
Is that what we're doing today?
No.
Oh. Well, I want the potato. So change the plan again.
I can't. I physically can't. I've done so much in the past 2 days, you don't even know. I can't change it again. But at least we're getting a mini season out of it.
Yes.
That's always exciting.
That is always exciting. Do we have any news to announce? All the usual stuff?
I've forgotten everything. All I have in my head is this story.
That's fair. Well, we have changed what we're doing on Patreon. We now have extra episodes.
Yes.
Before we said we had mini episodes, but they were getting less and less mini. Like the last one was an hour and 20 minutes.
Yeah, that's not really mini.
That's not a mini episode. That's an extra episode. And it was really good. It was about Daniel McNaughton and the McNaughton rules, which was related to the Archibald Kinross episode.
Kinloch
episode.
You've done that every time.
Every time.
That's
I can't.
Really funny.
It's just in my head as Archibald Kinross.
Maybe it's because you've seen Perth and Kinross more.
Maybe. And Archibald rhymes with Perth. So it just rolls off the tongue the same.
Just every time that we've talked about it, even in private.
Yeah, I keep saying it.
Well, yeah, if you like that episode, you'll really like the extra episode we just put up on Patreon.
Yeah.
So now is a great time.
Now's the time.
The subscriptions renew at the start of every month.
Yes.
So if you wanted a full month, go for the start of the month.
Yeah.
If that makes sense.
I think so.
You know what I mean?
I know what you mean. Or you can leave us a review on your podcast player. That would be super helpful if you want to support the podcast.
We keep forgetting to ask for that. But ratings and reviews are the best thing that will help other people find us.
Yeah. As well as telling your friends.
Yeah. So yeah, please leave us a rating and a review. Let us know what you think or what you'd like us to work on or talk about.
Yeah. Constructive criticism is welcomed.
We're over on Instagram.
Yep.
There are nearly 500 of you over there now.
That's pretty fun.
That won't seem like a lot to a lot of people, but I have built this from zero. I'm very proud of it.
I think it's a lot. Yeah, that's all the usual bump.
We're also still open to a Sassenach whiskey sponsorship.
Yes, we are. We could bring that back.
We're still here.
I haven't sassed you about that since season one.
Hasn't happened. We're still here. We're waiting.
We're waiting.
We're waiting to be discovered.
When's it going to happen for me, you know?
Well, I think we should roll the music. and get into the story.
Let's do it.
Kieran just hit his face off the microphone.
Yeah, I did. Like a professional.
We are professional.
We are professional at everything we do. Like, I'm attempting to build a woodshed out of an old fence we took down, and I hammered my thumb earlier while prying up a nail impressively. I wasn't even like using the hammer end.
It was an odd one.
It's fine, though. It's probably not broken. Probably.
Well, I mean, you didn't believe me when I actually had something broken, so...
Yeah, that was, we talked about that in a blether, the Ailey...
Over on Patreon.
Over on Patreon. Ellie broke her toe once by kicking a doorframe in anger.
I know, that's not what happened. I just turned the corner to come into the room.
Thinking the door had moved.
Too fast. So hit one of my little pinky toes off the doorframe.
Yep. I was like, Ellie, you've stubbed your toe, you're fine. But we're pretty sure it was broken.
Yeah, well, I wasn't fine. I was in agony.
Yeah, for a long time after that.
Like 6 weeks. Anyway.
Anyway.
This week... we have a local to us story.
Yes, we do.
And we took a little road trip for the episode.
Yes, we did. That was
so
exciting.
Nice.
Yeah, it was a beautiful day.
I had such a good time.
Mm-hmm.
But this week, we are talking about the Bran Seer.
Mm. Could you spell Bran for me?
Yes, B-R-A-H-A-N.
And it's Bran.
Bran.
As in Bran Stark.
Yes.
Excellent.
Boring Bran.
Bran flakes.
Bran Seer.
Ooh.
Now, usually at this point, I would ask you if you have ever heard of the Bran Seer, but I just said that we took a road trip for this episode, so yep. You have definitely heard of him.
Have I had spoilers? Is that what that is?
Kind of, I guess.
Kind of. Yeah, it was really fun. We took a drive, it was like 45 minutes away to some of his notable places.
Which we're going to talk about.
Yep.
Had you heard of the Bran Seer before?
No, I hadn't. Not something I come across other than... via the podcast when you've been coming up with ideas in the past.
Yeah, I've had this one tucked away for ages. For some reason, I didn't think it would work as a full episode, mm-hmm. but I was wrong. And I'm glad I was wrong, because it's a really cool story.
Yeah. I'm excited to get into it.
Well, the Bran Seer was a man called Kenneth Mackenzie, but he's more widely known as Conaoch Orr, which is Gaelic for Dark Kenneth.
Oh. I thought it was just... his name.
No, well, it is Conaoch.
Well, yeah, but...
it's the Gaelic for Kenneth.
Oh, I don't know that. A fine cognac.
Conaoch.
Swill a fine cognac and a cigar.
And, you know, like, if you don't have a Scottish accent, then, you know, I'd love to hear how you say Conaoch.
Conaoch. It's even spelt really strangely.
C-O-I-N-N-E-A-C-H.
Yeah.
And Orr is O-D-H-A-R.
When I saw it written down, I had no idea how to say it.
Conaoch Orr.
Conaoch Orr.
Conaoch Orr. Oh yeah, Gaelic for Dark Kenneth.
Hmm.
But I'll refer to him as Conaoch from here on out, so that it's consistent. Some people referred to him as Kenneth the Sallow, and sallow refers to skin that's a kind of unnatural, unhealthy, like brown-yellow colour.
Ooh, that's not good.
No. Not nice. Just someone who looks kind of sickly, I guess. Kenneth the Sallow. But Conaoch Orr is the most common.
Yeah.
Now, he was said to have been born in Uig on the Isle of Lewis. So in the Western Isles. Almost our neck of the woods. But I fell into this trap when we were doing our Flann and Isle episode. Conaoch came from Uig on Lewis, not Uig on Skye.
Oh, yeah.
I double checked.
Yep.
There are two. And it's so confusing because Lewis and Skye are like almost next to each other.
Mm-hmm.
And the Uig on each is in the same place. It's on the northwest side of each island.
That's really weird.
They're both called Uig.
Yeah. Oh, that's good. Because that was quite a lot of confusion for us when we were doing the Flann and Isle episode.
I couldn't work it out. But he was apparently from Lewis. And he was supposedly born at some point in the 1600s.
Okay.
But the date isn't completely clear.
I thought it was going to be a lot older than that.
Nope.
That's more contemporary than I expected for a seer.
Interesting, interesting.
How exciting.
At some point in his life, he left Lewis and moved to work on the Bran Estate, which is near Dingwall in the Highlands. If you're driving up to Ullabool, you drive past it.
Mm-hmm.
And it's close to a place called Loch Oosey, and that's also not very far from where we live currently.
Mm-hmm.
So if you know the Highlands, then you know the area that I'm talking about.
It's also a clan in Brave, the Disney movie.
Loch Oosey.
Dingwall! Oh. But it's near Inverness.
I do like Brave. The accents are questionable.
I like it.
But I do like Brave. Now, at this time, Bran Castle still existed.
Hmm.
There used to be a castle there, but it was demolished in the 1950s, so quite recently, and it was replaced with a mansion house. But for a really long time, the land and the estate around Bran were owned by the Mackenzies, and they were made the Lords and Earls of Seaforth.
Very cool.
And they owned the land when Conaoch was there, way back when. Now, Bran Castle was reasonably new during Conaoch's time, because it was built at the beginning of the 1600s. And the Mackenzies were a very powerful, and then later, Jacobite clan.
Mm.
They supported the Stuarts. And they had a lot of influence and wealth and resources. The Earl of Seaforth was the chieftain of all the Mackenzies. And he was a man called Kenneth Mackenzie, which was the same name that Conaoch had.
Mm.
Which is confusing. They both had the same name.
I thought if you were from the Outer Hebrides, you just had to be Donald MacDonald. I thought that was just a requirement.
I have relatives called Donald MacDonald.
There's so many.
Like, genuinely. My granny's brother.
Yeah.
He's Donald. And then her other brother is called Donald John. Like hyphenated. So there's Donald MacDonald and Donald John MacDonald.
Yeah. And then Murdo. Murdo Mackenzie a lot of the time.
Yeah.
Many, many Murdos. So the fact that there's two Kenneth Mackenzies isn't entirely out there.
No, funny that they're in the same story.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, this Kenneth Mackenzie was the chieftain of all the Mackenzies. He was very powerful. And he was the one in charge, like I said, when Conaoch came to work at Bran.
Very good, very good.
And this chieftain was born in 1635.
He was born, okay, okay.
So we know that he really existed.
Yeah.
He, just to give you a bit of background, he was extremely loyal to King Charles II.
Okay.
Even though Cromwell interrupted Charles II's reign, he remained loyal to him. And this meant that Seaforth actually spent some time in prison in the mid-1600s, which could not have been pleasant.
No, I don't imagine so.
But later, Charles II took the throne again, and Seaforth was released, and he became a very popular figure in Charles's court, because he'd been so loyal. And he enjoyed a lot of the perks that came with being a favourite in court. But we'll get to that a bit later.
Ooh. There's a Seaforth Highlander tartan, and I've always wondered where it came from.
Well, they were a regiment.
Oh, that makes sense.
In the army. But I think part of that comes because Seaforth had control of a lot of men, and they were called to fight for the British army. I can't remember exactly when, sometime later. So they started as the Seaforth Highlanders, but they've been kind of amalgamated into a different regiment now.
That's pretty cool.
It doesn't exist in the same way.
Yeah.
That's where that comes from.
That makes sense, because the Seaforth tartan was the tartan that my pipe band wore. I was a drummer in a pipe band in school.
And there's a bar called the Seaforth in Liverpool. Seaforth married a woman called Isabel, or Isabella. I've seen both. Isabel is a more traditional Scottish name, especially spelled I-S-O-B-E-L.
Okay.
I feel like the fact that she's called Isabella in places might be her trying to fit in with English and French courts.
Maybe, yeah.
Because it's more anglicised than the Scottish version.
Yeah, it's interesting. Isabella.
You made it sound Italian.
Isabella.
But they had 8 children together.
Good work.
4 sons and 4 daughters.
Mm.
So back to our story, just wanted to give you some context. Conaoch is working on Seaforth's estate.
Excellent.
And sometime before he left Lewis, or after he started at Bran, something happened that would change Conaoch's life forever.
Mm.
Something that would cement his place in Scottish history books.
Mm-hmm.
And like every story I've ever told on this podcast, there are several different versions. I've gathered them, I will tell you each of them. And at this point, you just choose which one you like the best.
I mean, that's the Scottish way.
Which one makes the best story?
Like, if you're telling your friends about this story, you just pick your favourite one.
Mm-hmm.
That's how Scottish storytelling works.
This is your reference. I've given you your options.
Mm-hmm.
pick what you like the best. So in this first version, Konya's mother was travelling home one night after a long day on the fields. And by this time, the sun was properly starting to set and dusk was rolling in. It was getting dark. And her route home took her through a graveyard.
Spooky.
A very ancient graveyard. Now, the Isle of Lewis has a long history with the Vikings.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if you knew that.
I think so. I think it's come up before.
Well, people have been living on that island for a very long time, and there's strong connections with the Vikings there. It had gotten properly dark by this point as she was travelling home. She was walking in almost complete darkness. As Konya's mother walked between the stones and the mossy markers, you know how they get that way when they're really old, she began to see the ghostly spectral forms of men and women returning to their graves.
Spooky.
They didn't really pay her any mind, and she just tried to stay out of their way. Let them go about their business.
So, oh man, it's just passing through, everybody.
Now, every grave had a ghost that returned to its earthly home. She saw a ghost return and disappear into each one. Except one in particular. Konya's mother walked over to it to try and see if there was any information on the stone, which might explain the absence, but she couldn't see very much. All she knew was that the stone was very old, and it was carved with runes that she didn't understand. But when she turned around to leave, the ghost of a tall, regal woman stood behind her.
Going, excuse me, you're standing over my grave. Please move. I can't just fade through you. It's unbecoming.
That is almost exactly what she said. She asked Konya's mother to let her pass.
Not just to get to fuck.
No. She wanted to be let past because she had to return to her grave before the sun came up. Now, Konya's mother instinctively went to move at first, but then she stopped herself. And she asked the ghostly woman who she was, because she was interested.
Just chatting.
Mm-hmm. And what the ghost said was, "I am a princess of the Danes. Let me return to my grave."
Well, that's unusual.
Konya's mother said no.
How rude.
Brave move. Don't think I could have done it.
What are you going to do? Punch me?
The princess glared at her, unhappy to be at the mercy of a mortal nobody. So she carries on. She says, "I have to get back to my grave. What do you want? You have to let me past." So Konya's mother thought for a few moments, knowing that she had the upper hand for now, but she was dealing with the dead, so she probably wouldn't have it for very long.
I mean, that's fair.
So she said, "I demand tribute. My son Konyak is my pride and joy, my only son. I want you to give him the second sight.
No.
Allow him to see into the future, and if you do this, I'll let you return to your grave."
Interesting, interesting.
The princess looked very thoughtful, but she was sure she could see the first streaks of dawn by this point, so she was concerned. So she agreed. She told her that the sun will have what you want. So Konya's mother stepped aside, leaving the path free, and the ghost stepped towards the stone and vanished.
Top-notch story.
The next day, remember Konya's in Bran?
Yep, yep.
He's going about his tasks as normal, nothing particularly exciting happening, until he felt something strange in his jacket pocket. So he reached in, looked for it, pulled out, and saw it was a stone about the size of his palm.
Ooh.
It was smooth, but it had a hole that went right the way through the middle. And when he lifted it up to inspect it, because he hadn't put it in his pocket, he looked through the hole and he was taken aback with what he saw.
Oh.
Because he started receiving visions of the future.
Very cool.
So the ghost had been telling the truth when she made her promise to Konya's mother. Konya now had the second sight.
Damn. I wonder when his mum told him that. Because, you know, he probably didn't go home very often.
Maybe a letter?
Oh, maybe. P.S. I may have got you second sight. Was tripping, made a deal with a ghost.
If you really have it, then you know this already. forgive the explanation, Mum.
Is do I need to write a letter if you're going to know what it says without me sending it to you? And then what if it falls over in the woods and there's no one around to hear it? Interesting. If a tree falls in the woods and no one's around to hear it, does it sign its name?
You're getting very weird.
Called for the bad place. Sorry, it's my second sight.
I don't believe you.
I don't believe him.
A slightly different version of this story has Konjac finding the stone after falling asleep at the top of a hill. But when he lay down to take a nap, he didn't realise that he was at the top of a fairy hill. In some tellings, this is where he found the stone after the ghost blessed him. He just happened to be on a fairy hill, and that's how he got it. But in others, the ghost doesn't feature at all. These stories explain that the fairies put the stone in his pocket because they were on his hill.
That's very nice of them.
So slightly different.
I like the first one.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's the better story.
Well, there's also a very different version that explains how Konjac got his power. While he was working at Bran, Konjac made an enemy of one of the farmer's wives. She absolutely hated him. And she hated him so much that she decided she had to be rid of him. She didn't want to be around him anymore.
Oh, shit.
So she decided to poison him.
That is the woman's weapon.
Pretty brutal.
Yeah.
Just seems like, oh, God, I hate you. I'm going to murder you.
I know. It seems a bit much. Just all in. Like, you can just be annoyed. It's easier.
I know. Deal like, with it.
Deal with it. How often do you see him? You know? Bit much.
Well, she was the one who was responsible for making their meals every night and had them sent out to the fields wherever they were working. But that night, when she'd made her decision, she laced his dinner with poison and sent it out to the field where he was working like normal, looking forward to being free of him.
Yep.
However, because she was busy lacing it with poison, it took longer to reach Konjac than it did normally, his dinner. And, you know, he was up in the fields, he'd had a long day of work, he was exhausted, hungry. He decided to take a nap.
Ooh.
While he was waiting for his meal. He couldn't work anymore.
That's a good deal. Maybe I should start doing that.
Just out in the garden.
I meant just sitting here on my laptop. Like, nah, I can't do any more until I've had a meal. And just kick the feet back, fall asleep.
If only you had a loyal wife who could make your dinner for you.
Oh, but if it was taking too long, I'd be like, I can't do any more.
Konjac was woken up from the sleep with the feeling of something really heavy pressing down on his chest. So he woke up with a start. He got a bit of a fright. And when he reached into his pocket, he found a white stone with a hole in the middle.
Very cool.
And he was curious about this because he knew that he hadn't left it there. He'd never seen the stone before. He peered through it and was shocked by what he saw. Because he could see, clear as day, the farmer's wife carefully poisoning his meal. And he could see it as if he were there.
Cheeky bint.
He couldn't believe what she'd done. But only a few moments later, after this discovery, his meal arrived.
Interesting.
So he left it on the ground after, you know, the little child, whoever dropped it off, left. He left it on the ground just looking at it because he wasn't really sure what to do. Could he trust what he'd seen through a hole in a stone?
See, I'd be sitting there going like, oh man, this could be poisoned. But then again, I am very hungry and I'll probably be fine.
You wouldn't have survived long at like a royal court.
No.
Lots of rivals. Konjac ultimately decided that he couldn't take the risk. If there was any chance that it could be true, he couldn't touch any of it. Now, this next part of the story, I really hate. So when I tell people about the story, aside from the podcast, I'm going to eliminate it completely because I hate it. Konjac decided that it wasn't enough to just not eat the meal. He had to know if she had actually poisoned it, if what he had seen was actually true. So he fed his dinner to his collie.
Oh, that's a bit much.
Isn't that awful?
That is awful.
To his dog.
To his own dog.
I hate it.
Oh, that's
not nice. I hate everything about it. I don't like it.
I thought it was maybe going to meet like a wild animal.
Nope.
Like a bird.
His faithful working dog.
bastard.
I know.
Should have eaten the poison.
Be a very short episode, wouldn't it?
He had one vision, he chose not to believe it, and he died. Oh, but how do you know he had the vision? Ah.
The collie would tell everyone. But yeah, he gave the meal to his dog, and then watched in horror as the dog quickly succumbed to the poison that had been put in his meal.
What a bastard. Well, that's not cool.
No. But that's the other version of how he got his second sight.
Mm.
And in one last version, when Cognac looks through the stone for the first time, he loses sight in that eye completely.
Oh, permanently, yeah.
Which reminds me a lot of the legends of Odin.
Oh, yeah.
The Allfather, not the cutie who's not lying by my desk. Not the dog who's here.
Because he had to give up his eye to gain the knowledge of the world.
Exactly.
He
had to sacrifice it into a well.
It turns out version, I think one a raven ate it. After he had, because he had to like hang himself on some spikes from a tree.
Yeah, but he sacrificed it for knowledge.
Yeah.
So this is very reminiscent of that to me.
Yes.
That Cognac had to give up the sight in his eye for the knowledge of the future.
Mm-hmm.
Not the same, but
yeah,
you know.
Get second sight, lose your depth perception.
It's a hard bargain.
Maybe not so bad.
It's a hard bargain.
Maybe you walked into door frames after.
No. It happens with two eyes, Kieran, and it really hurts. No, you don't think so, but you didn't do it. It was really painful.
So then it hurts again every time it was brought up.
Yeah, especially because you didn't believe me. That's what hurts the most. So that's Cognac's origin story. He now has the second sight, which is what would make him famous across the Highlands.
Excellent.
What was interesting when I was looking into the story is that there's been a pretty strong belief that not only is second sight completely like real,
mm-hmm.
it's also kind of normal throughout Highland history. A lot of people just kind of accepted and completely took for granted that, oh, of course some people have it.
Yeah, that's really weird.
It's a thing, and a lot of the time it's treated as different from witchcraft. Having second sight is fine.
Hmm.
It's even seen by some people as more of a curse.
Oh, so that's
you
fair.
May get pity if you have second sight,
uh-huh.
but you wouldn't necessarily be burned as a witch.
That's strange, isn't it? Yeah, because at no point is anyone contesting his second sight, as far as I'm aware.
No.
So I have second sight. Ah, makes sense. Mm-hmm. That's so bizarre.
That seems to be the case, particularly in the Highlands.
Mm.
It's just, it's a thing.
We are a superstitious bunch.
Mm-hmm.
I learned that to have perfect pitch, you know, when you can hear a note and say what it is, or a chord or whatever, is genetic.
Oh.
There's like a 1 in 50 chance you'll have the gene that means you could have perfect pitch, and then when you're really young, you have to get trained in it. But if you don't have it, like as an adult, you'll never have it. Without like serious amounts of practice and training.
That's interesting.
Isn't that weird? Something like that. Because you hear that and you're like, oh, that's interesting, that's unusual. Like, oh, with second sight, there's a 1 in 50 chance, but you need to have a magic rock.
I don't know, I feel like it's one of those things that I've heard of a lot. It's just a thing.
Mm-hmm.
Visions of the future. It crops up all the time.
It doesn't do anything for me.
No.
Falls under fortune telling.
In my head, they're different.
I think they are different. There are different classifications of it,
mm-hmm.
but it's all hokum to me.
You are wearing your ham sandwich t-shirt.
I am. I'm wearing my ham sandwich t-shirt bought at Germany Spooky Dog. Oh, sorry, there's a plug in my throat.
So I mentioned that Cognac had a stone in every version of the story.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. There's lots of references to this type of stone throughout history as well, as well as Second Sight. It's called an adder stone, serpent stone, a hag stone, a witch stone. It changes depending on where you are and what the history is, basically. In Roman times, Pliny, the philosopher,
mm-hmm.
naturalist.
Historian? I don't know.
He wrote a big volume called The Natural History, and he talks about adder stones in natural history.
Very cool.
But his explanation for their creation is kind of gross.
Oh, what does he think it was?
Well, apparently they come when serpents, snakes, get tied up in a big knot.
Mm-hmm.
And then they're all, like, they're all not spitting, but they're creating saliva.
Mm-hmm.
They're all stuck together. And the saliva is what makes up the stone.
Well, that's unusual.
So in his version, they're kind of glassy looking, but they still have a hole.
Oh.
And again, in his story, they're used by the druids.
Oh, very cool.
Of that time.
That's badass.
I'd never heard that explanation before.
No.
Because to me, I'd heard of hagstones growing up. Like, I always knew what they were.
Mm-hmm.
But my experience was that, and I mean a hagstone just as a name. I don't mean it in a mean way.
Mm-hmm.
That's just the name. They are made when they're exposed to water.
Yeah.
So water, what's the word? The water basically works a hole into the stone.
Yeah.
And it has to happen naturally. You can't carve one. You have to find one.
Mm-hmm.
Which I did as a child. I had one. And it got lost. And I'm very upset. I've been looking for one almost ever since.
Yeah.
And I've never found another one.
I've never seen one in the flesh, in the stone.
But that was always my understanding, and that seems to be another explanation for how you get one.
Yeah, I think so. That's what I thought it was, because there's like little bits of sand kind of wear away a little hole,
mm-hmm.
and the sand gets stuck in there, so the water comes past and causes it to spin, and it just really slowly bores a hole through.
Mm-hmm. Bores a hole. That's what I was trying to remember. That's the word.
Because I was on a geography field trip
Ooh.
At school. The best. And the geography teacher got super excited because there was a really deep hole carved into like a giant big rock in a river, and at the bottom were two pebbles, and it was a good like 4 inches deep where the water had come past and rattled these pebbles in a circle, and it just bored a hole down. So it's like that but on a smaller scale.
Yeah, I think it's that same process.
Yeah,
but in a stone that you can carry.
Mm-hmm. Palm sized.
Yeah, so that was how I always understood them.
Yes.
And in my experience, which is minor, they were always called hagstones.
I would have just called them, oh, cool!
Well, Cognac had one, and that was how he was able to see the future.
Very good, very good.
Now, the first written record of Cognac happened in 1769.
Okay.
Which is about 100 years after Cognac was living.
Mm.
And it's in a book called A Tour of Scotland, or A Tour in Scotland, sorry, written by a man called Thomas Pennant.
Very cool.
So he first mentions the name Cognac Ore, I believe. But it wasn't until 1877 that Cognac was referred to in writing as the Bran Seer for the first time.
Well, that's interesting.
And this was a book that was called The Prophecies of the Bran Seer by Alexander Mackenzie.
Very nice.
And it was written all about Cognac.
Hmm. I wonder how accurate it was 200 years later.
We're going to talk about that later.
Ooh.
You're jumping the gun, Kieran.
Oh, sorry. Sorry, I'm too excited.
Jeez.
Oh.
For the book, apparently Mackenzie travelled through the Highlands gathering Gaelic stories, which we've talked about before.
Mm-hmm.
Gaelic stories were always passed down orally. They weren't written down. So you learned Gaelic stories by being told them from someone older than you.
Yeah.
But he travelled around the Highlands and he gathered all the stories of of Cognac and the prophecies and brought them all together, wrote the book.
Very cool.
We'll be talking about Alexander Mackenzie in this book later on.
Mm-hmm.
But just that was the first time he was mentioned in writing.
I wonder if anyone trolled him. Like, oh yeah, there's actually this one prophecy about a young man who had come looking for his stories. And Alexander Mackenzie was there being like,
oh my
That's
god.
Me. Oh, there's just this big group of Highlanders all just laughing their arse off at him.
Pissing themselves in the pub.
Hey, you fucking believe me.
But here's what you're all here for. This is the bit that everyone's going to be excited about. Because we're going to talk about some of the prophecies that Cognac made throughout his life.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to try and list them mostly in chronological order.
Sounds good.
And these are the ones that arguably have actually happened.
Oh shit.
That he did actually predict.
He did prophesize.
Mm-hmm.
That's pretty cool. I'm gonna probably shit on all of them, but I'll do my best not to.
You're not excited even a little bit. I'm excited. Even if I don't fully believe it, I'm excited to tell you.
Yeah, I'm excited to hear them.
You look like a ham sandwich.
That's just because I'm sitting here with my ham sandwich, a t-shirt, eating a ham sandwich.
You look like a ham sandwich.
Playing with a piece of ham. doesn't mean I can't appreciate a good story.
You shouldn't play with your ham while we're recording. Okay, first one.
Yep.
While he was still alive, Konyuch made a weird prediction about a place called Fairburn Tower, which was near Muir Vord.
Okay.
Which is near Dingwall.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of... It's on the... I'm just talking shit. I was going to try and explain where it is based on what's near it, but if you don't know where Dingwall is, or Inverness is, that's useless.
Yeah. I mean, that's where it is. Near Muir Vord, Inverness.
Read a book.
Come to the Highlands. It's nice.
I don't mean that. I don't mean that. I like to be helpful. But Fairburn Tower is near, or was near, Muir Vord.
Yes. Is it a place or is it a physical tower?
Well, it was a very impressive, like, fortress.
Oh.
It was a tower house, which we've talked about before.
We have. Very cool.
Now, Konyuch said at some point a cow was going to give birth to a calf in the uppermost chamber of this tower, and that this would herald the very end of the Mackenzies of Fairburn, who at the time were a really powerful family. Now, he said this when Fairburn Tower was completely alive with activity, mm-hmm. and the Mackenzies had lots of money. The tower was lived in. It seemed utterly ridiculous when he said it.
That's fair. That's pretty ridiculous on the whole. That's pretty out there.
But eventually, it did come to pass that the family left Fairburn, started living somewhere else. The line diminished.
Mm-hmm.
The tower was left to go to ruin. And once it was empty, a farmer who lived locally started keeping his straw in the tall tower.
Yeah.
To keep it dry.
Smart.
And a cow noticed the trail of straw leading up the stairs.
Oh, shit.
So followed the breadcrumbs up to what must have looked like heaven. A giant pile of untouched straw, and stayed there.
That's very cool.
But when it was discovered the cow was up there, they realised that this cow was heavily pregnant, so they couldn't get it down the stairs.
Okay, that's pretty weird.
So the cow had her calf in the uppermost chamber of Fairburn Tower.
Oh! Okay, that's pretty good. That's pretty good. Because my argument was going to be that, because I saw some of his prophecies on one of the placards when we went out there. And the ones I saw, I'm like, well, if you just wait long enough, most of these prophecies will come true.
You'll probably have a bit of that later on.
I think so. But that one's very specific.
Right.
To have come true. I like it. I like it.
Mm. So that's probably the least serious of his predictions. Because nobody really got hurt.
Not if you're the Mackenzies, I suppose.
True. Well, I mean, they weren't, like, murdered or anything.
It's no. Just,
the line came to an end.
Mm-hmm.
The second one is that Konyuch predicted the Battle of Culloden.
Ooh.
Which happened about 100 years after Konyuch died.
Very cool, very cool.
So here's what he said.
I was just about to ask.
This is from Alexander Mackenzie's book.
Mm-hmm.
O Dramossi, thy bleak moor shall, ere many generations have passed away, be stained with the best blood of the Highlands. Glad am I that I will not see the day, for it will be a fearful period. Heads will be lopped off by the score, and no mercy shall be shown or quarter given on either side.
That is quite accurate.
Now, he apparently said this when he was on the moor that would be the site of the later battle.
Shit.
It's also called Dramossi Moor.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why he says, O Dramossi. Because it wasn't Culloden Battlefield yet. It hadn't happened.
Uh-huh. That's wild.
And his description is very accurate because it was a very bloody battle and the Highlands was basically decimated.
Yep, that is what happened.
Now, the Battle of Culloden happened in what year, Kieran? Do you know?
1746.
I can't believe you actually got that.
Was that right? Oh, yeah.
This is the biggest upset. quick, name everyone and friends.
The actors.
Yes. We may have only done this on Patreon. I can't remember.
No, I don't think so.
Okay, we'll just go with it.
Jennifer Aniston.
Yep.
Lisa Kudrow.
Yeah.
Courtney Cox.
Yeah.
Matt LeBlanc.
Yep.
David Schwimmer.
Yeah.
Matthew Perry.
Yeah, oh my God! I swear we mean no disrespect to the people who were brutally killed at the Battle of Culloden.
Oh, yes, we're somber. Man, did I take a brain pill this morning? Oh, the best my memory has ever worked.
I can't believe that just happened. I'm so glad we recorded that. Otherwise, we'd never believe it. Oh, deep breath. You calm down.
If you haven't, if this is your first episode, in a previous episode of this series, I can't remember which, we were talking about my lack of pop culture knowledge and my inability to name the actors who were in Friends.
Or anyone.
Or anyone, but that was the example because we watch Friends all the time. But you can go back and listen to that. I think it was episode 2.
I don't remember. I can't remember if it was in an episode or if it was on Patreon.
I'm pretty sure it was in an episode. I'm pretty sure.
Regardless, you just did it.
I just did it.
Oh my god.
Fucking living my life over here.
Oh my god.
1746. I only partially guessed.
It must have been in there somewhere, because that's a hell of a guess.
It's the date I thought, but I wasn't convinced.
Good job.
Thank you.
So the Battle of Culloden happened in 1746.
Yeah, it did.
As Kieran knows, completely.
Because I'm amazing.
Cognac was born at some point in the 1600s.
Yes.
He was definitely dead before 1746.
Yes.
He may even have been dead before the first of the Jacobite risings.
Mm-hmm.
So I think the first one was 1715.
Okay.
Because there were several risings before the final rising, which culminated in the Battle of Culloden, which we've mentioned briefly, but we've never talked about.
No.
So that was another prediction.
I mean, that's pretty good. That's pretty good.
Mm-hmm.
I'm less impressed by the prediction because this guy's writing it down after it happened.
That's an important thing to bear in mind.
So a lot of the people who've retold the stories, like he might have made a prediction along those lines, but it could have been embellished. And then once it happens, you can just change the prediction to fit the truth, which I suppose could also have happened with the cow up the tower.
Well, that's exactly a theory that we're going to talk about.
Yeah.
But there are some of these predictions that happened after the book was published.
Yeah, that'll be more, I guess, more compelling. But maybe he also just ignored all the predictions that didn't come true.
Well, exactly. Because these are the ones that I talked about the most. I haven't got a copy of the book. I couldn't get one in time because we changed topics so suddenly.
Yeah, because 2 days ago we went, let's do this!
Well, yeah, I had planned season 3 months ago,
mm-hmm.
so was able to do some prep, but I only decided this a couple days ago, so I wasn't able to get the book.
Yep.
So I'm assuming because there's a whole book, there must be a whole load that either haven't happened or happened wrong.
It all reminds me of Good Omens,
yes.
The book by Neil Gaiman and Terry Pratchett.
Agnes Nutter.
And they talk about Agnes Nutter and her book of predictions, and they're all unequivocally absolutely true, but only one copy was ever sold because no one thought any of it was any good. But
such a good book.
But you have to, like, back decode what they meant, and sometimes it's only after the fact that you realise that she was right.
Well, this is kind of that.
It's kind of that. Yeah.
The next one is that Cognac predicted the Highland clearances.
Oh, wow.
Now, he said things like, the sheep shall eat the men.
Ooh.
The clans will become so effeminate as to flee from their native country before an army of sheep.
Oh, I see. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
When sheep shall become so numerous that the bleating of one shall be heard by the other from Concra, I might be saying that wrong. It's near Kyle in Lough Halsh.
Okay.
To Bundaloch in Kintail. They shall be at their height in price and henceforth will go back and deteriorate.
Mm.
And the ancient proprietors of the soil shall give place to strange merchant proprietors, and the whole highlands will become one huge deer forest. The whole country will be so utterly desolated and depopulated that the crow of a cock shall not be heard north of Dromoctor. The people will emigrate to islands now unknown, but which shall yet be discovered in the boundless oceans. After which the deer and other wild animals in the huge wilderness shall be exterminated and drowned by horrid black rains. The people will then return and take undisturbed possession of the lands of their ancestors.
That's badass.
Terrifying.
So sad, the Highland Clearances.
Yeah, if you didn't know, the Highland Clearances were a really difficult and painful time in Highland history.
Mm-hmm.
We don't have time to get into it in depth, but it basically boiled down to the landlords, the big estate owners, and the people who had titles, realizing that they could make more money by raising sheep on their land than continuing the tradition of tenant farming, mm-hmm. which they had been doing. And the old system basically meant that tenant farmers rented their land from the laird through the factor.
Mm-hmm.
And they worked the land to pay their rent and yep. to provide for themselves. But during the clearances, which was a period of about 50 years, it was a long time, they were evicted in enormous numbers by landlords across the Highlands. And they were either forced to find other work and other homes, so things like fishing, mm-hmm. or moving to cities. There was a huge exodus to places like Glasgow at this mm-hmm. time, Edinburgh. Or they had to leave the country completely. So this led to a huge emigration from the Highlands to places like Canada and even further. It was a really painful period. And it's now part of the reason that so many people globally have connections through their ancestry to Scotland.
Yeah, we have quite a lot of American listeners.
Mm-hmm.
All you American listeners, if any of you have Scottish heritage, that might just be why.
Yeah, if you look back, that's a pretty common reason because mm-hmm. so many people left.
When was it?
1750 to 1800-ish.
Okay. So before the book again?
Yes, before the book. But it's sad, you can see still, 300 years later, you can still see old crofts.
Yeah, you can
and
see.
And old run rigs.
You can see the like all the old stone dikes and where they were divvied out into different mm-hmm. farms.
The run rigs was the way that they divided up the farmland.
Oh, yeah.
Like per croft. You've seen them. There's some outside Ullapool, I'm fairly sure. They're like big strips.
Yeah.
And I think they rotated
mm-hmm.
between tenants. So everyone got a share of like the good soil.
Oh, yeah. I didn't know.
But they're still there.
I have seen them, yeah. They're
very eerie.
Very powerful.
So Conaoch apparently predicted that this was going to happen.
Very, very accurately.
Mm-hmm. Eerily accurately.
Mm-hmm. Is that thing where it's so accurate, I don't believe it. I mean, that's way too on the money.
Do you have any guesses for other things that Conaoch might have foresaw?
Ooh, did he foresee the telephone?
Not that I'm aware of.
I'm thinking of like Scottish inventions Fair. And things.
Yep.
Mr. Bell. I don't know, I can't really think of anything.
Well, what if I told you that he predicted the building of the Caledonian Canal?
Oh, there you go.
He's stunned, folks.
Yes.
He doesn't know what to do.
Trying to get my head around that. And then I saw a bird go past and went, ooh, a bird. And I'll focus.
It's very difficult to keep his attention.
I'm like a puppy.
Well, Conaoch predicted, one day ships will sail round the back of Tomnahurich Hill.
Well, there you go.
If you haven't been here and you don't live in Inverness, this might not make a huge amount of sense, but the Caledonian Canal runs behind Tomnahurich Hill, and it's known locally as the Fairy Hill.
Ah.
But for you, Kieran, it's not far from my granny's house.
That is useful.
It looks very strange. It's like this really strange mound mm-hmm. covered in trees.
I think you talked about the Fairy Hill in a previous episode. I think it was
the Uckert Castle episode.
Oh, yeah.
We talked about it. There's a lot of legends about Tomnahurich Hill on its own. But yeah, the canal goes round the back of it.
Mm.
The front is, I think it might be called Tomnahurich Road.
That would make sense.
It's on the way to the Aquedome.
Okay. You need to point it out. I can't think.
We've definitely gone past it.
Yeah.
Anyway, the canal goes round the back of it.
Yes.
And also past my granny's house.
Yep.
So I spent a lot of my childhood at or on the canal.
Mm-hmm.
I've actually walked along the bottom.
Ooh.
I'm kind of a big deal.
Concrete shoes?
No. The mafia didn't try to kill me. My granddad took me along the bottom when they were building it.
That's a lot more cool, to be fair.
So they like drained it effectively and they were working on it.
That's pretty nifty.
So I can't remember if my cousin was there. I'm not sure. But I remember granddad was there. My dad might have been there too.
Mm.
But yeah, we walked along the bottom of the canal.
That's very nifty. It like bisects the whole country, doesn't it? Is it all the Caledonian Canal? Or is the canal only Loch Ness to the sea?
No, I think the whole thing is the Caledonian Canal. It goes along the length of the Great Glen.
Yeah, and
it joins a whole load of lochs together.
Coast to coast, yeah. Mm-hmm. It joins them all so that you can nip across without having to go up and round Cape Wrath.
Yeah, you can get from one side of the country to the other without going round the top.
Yeah. I think it's Cape Wrath.
Mm,
Is that a lie?
I don't know, Kieran.
I don't know. I'll look it up. I'll do extra research. So much,
and you pick, and it hurts. All I know is it's a controversial topic among sailors because some people claim that they have sailed round all of Britain when really they have sailed up England, some of Scotland, and then nip through the canal and then go back down. So yeah. They haven't gone round any of the northern part of Scotland.
Yeah, any of the bit that would be difficult. Mm-hmm. That winds my dad up no end. That's a personal pet peeve of his. And it is Cape Wrath at the very top of Scotland.
Okay, that's fine. And yeah, I know it's a pet peeve of your dad's because we've talked about it quite a lot.
Yeah, he brings it up quite a lot.
It doesn't make sense. You haven't gone round the whole country if you haven't gone round the top.
No, and it's like the Caledonian Canal is quite far south.
Yeah.
Like it's a big chunk. It's not like you've just missed 10 miles at the top or something, or you've not done Orkney and Shetland. Like it's a significant chunk.
Well, considering the top of it is at Inverness.
Yeah.
That's the most northern part.
Yeah, and the bottom part's like near Oban and towards Glasgow.
Mm-hmm.
Silly.
Point being that now big boats with sails come through the canal regularly and have done for a long time.
Yep.
So his prediction, one day ships will sail around the back of Tomnahurich Hill, would have seemed like lunacy back then because it's all land.
That's pretty good.
But now the canal runs past it and ships go right the way through.
Yeah. I like that.
Another prediction that he made about Tomnahurich Hill specifically was that one day the fairies that live in the hill would be caged there forever, trapped with a ring of iron and under lock and key.
Oh.
I'm paraphrasing a little bit there. But in the 1700s, a cemetery was created on Tomnahurich Hill.
Oh.
It's a cemetery now.
Oh.
And it's surrounded by a large iron fence and it's locked every night with a padlock.
Interesting. Fairies can't get out.
Nope.
Oh no. Poor fairies.
I don't think they like iron very much.
Yes.
According to legend.
According to the old legends. It's pretty good.
Mm-hmm.
It's pretty compelling.
You see what I mean?
I'm with you.
So we're still going. I've still got more.
Oh.
Cognac spoke of black bridleless horses belching fire and steam.
The old train?
Yeah, the railway.
Yep, nice.
Railways were built in the 1800s, similar in time to the canal, I think they came after. And if you're interested in that, we did an episode on the Taybridge disaster this season.
Yes, we did.
So you can go back and listen to that at your leisure.
Your leisure.
So some people take that to be a prediction about the railway.
Mm-hmm.
How about this one? I'll try and get you to guess this one too. Streams of fire and water will run beneath the streets of Inverness and into every house.
Gas and water?
Yeah, gas and water pipes.
Nice.
They were put in the 1800s, I believe.
That's a pretty good one as well.
Fire and water.
Yeah.
Every house.
You haven't been telling that to people. People are going to have fire on tap. What does that even mean?
Well, not even that, just streams of fire underground.
Yeah.
Sounds mental.
It does sound mental, doesn't it? That's pretty good. It's pretty good.
This one I don't think you'll be able to guess. So I'll talk you through it.
I mean, you didn't think I'd know the date of Culloden.
I mean, that's very true. I shouldn't underestimate you, should I?
Here we go. That's I just named fault. All six actors on Friends. I'm on fire.
Proud of you, babe.
Thanks.
That's a
big deal.
This prediction went thusly. A village with four churches will get another spire and a ship will come from the sky and moor at it.
Building the airport?
No, a good guess, but no.
A ship will come from the sky. A hot air balloon.
Close.
Or like a blimp.
Yeah, an airship was what he was supposedly talking about.
Very cool.
Apparently he made this prediction while pointing at a field near Strathpeffer, which is near Dingwall. It's a Victorian spa town. And at the time, nobody had any idea what he was talking about. That didn't make any sense at all. But much later, at some point in the 1920s or 30s, unconfirmed, an airship was flying over the area. You know, the big Zeppelin things. And it had to make an emergency landing.
Mm.
It got into trouble. And when they lowered their grappling hook, it caught on the spire of one of the churches.
Very cool.
And St. Anne's Church, that's there now, was the fifth church to be built in Strathpeffer. Mm. And it had been finished not long before. So the town got another spire. and then a ship came down from the sky and moored at it.
That's pretty good. That's pretty good. And that must have been after the book was written.
The book was released in 1877.
Nice.
And this happened either in the 20s or 30s. I saw both.
That's pretty good.
So I have a few more for you. And these are, remember, I'm going chronologically, so these are getting gradually more modern.
Yeah.
Cognac foresaw great disaster when 5 bridges were built to cross the River Ness.
Oh, sorry, I saw my guitar wobble. I thought the dog was going to knock off.
He's sleeping and like pushing it with his front legs.
You're gonna push it off, bud.
Hate stupid guitar. Dad loves it more than me.
Sorry, you were saying.
He foresaw something really bad happening when 5 bridges crossed the River Ness.
Oh, okay.
So when he was talking, there weren't that many, mm-hmm. if any. I'm not sure. So this eventually happened by August 1939. There were 5 bridges total that crossed the River Ness.
Yep.
I'll try and remember to post a picture of the centre of Inverness, because you can see a whole load of the bridges all in a row. Now, I don't know if you're familiar.
It's a pretty significant date.
1939 was a bad year.
That's not a good year for anybody, really.
The bridge was built in August 1939. And then on September 1st, 1939, Adolf Hitler invaded Poland, starting World War II.
Damn.
Basically one of the worst things that could have happened.
Yeah.
And it happened just after the 5th bridge was built.
Does that mean it was the bridge builder's fault?
No.
So if there hadn't been a 5th bridge, he wouldn't have invaded?
Well, see, that's the problem when you start messing with things.
Yeah. Is it cause and effect?
Or is it just fact that the 5th bridge will be built and then this will happen?
Yeah. And what's the span of time? If the 5th bridge had been finished in 1938, could you still count it?
Exactly.
Shitting all over everything.
So that was another funny one.
Yes, not funny, but yes.
No, it's strange. Yeah. Strange coincidence. And Cognac made other bridge-related predictions concerning the River Ness.
Mm-hmm.
He said that when 9 bridges crossed the River Ness, there would be fire, flood, and calamity.
Oh, man.
This one confused me a little bit. I was doing my due diligence, because I thought there were 7 bridges that crossed the river, like now, today, not 9.
Oh, are there 9? Okay.
Well, I don't know if that's what I'm saying. Oh, I thought there were 7.
I would have guessed 3, so what do I know?
There's more than 3 in the town centre.
Yeah, if you'd asked me to throw out a guess.
You've crossed more than 3. Anyway, I thought there were 7.
Mm-hmm.
Apparently there's more, if anyone knows more than I do, tell me.
Yeah.
I felt very ashamed because this is where I grew up.
We need to go down and count.
In one place, I saw that there are 7 suspension bridges.
Okay.
So maybe there's 2 that aren't, and then that makes up the 9.
Maybe.
Mm-mm. Don't know. We're getting very bogged down here. Now, apparently the 9th bridge, this mysterious 9th bridge,
mm-hmm.
was built in 1987.
Okay.
And it was the following year that the Piper Alpha disaster happened.
Oh, with the rig.
Piper Alpha was an oil rig mm-hmm. out in the North Sea. And in July 1988, 167 people were killed when the oil rig exploded.
Horrifying.
Horrific. And that's the reason that we haven't done an episode on it, because it's still really painful for a lot of people, and I don't want to make it worse.
Too contemporary, strangely.
But Piper Alpha was the worst offshore oil disaster in history, if you take it by the number of casualties and the financial cost.
Oh, yeah.
Apparently the loss from the disaster was about £1.7 billion.
Oh, my days.
In the 80s. I don't know if that's been altered to accommodate inflation.
Mental.
Mm-hmm.
Fuck.
So fire, flood, and calamity.
Yeah. Yeah, that does fit, doesn't it? I was trying to think. Actually, I was just thinking about how I like the word calamity.
It's because you like The Hobbit.
Yep. The world's greatest calamity, Smaug. Or something like that. That's pretty compelling, you know, pretty good.
And Cognac actually seemed to predict the discovery of oil in the North Sea generally.
Oh.
I'm sorry this is confusing. I'm touching on a lot of major points in Scottish history.
I like it. I think
it's
not fine.
Confusing. But oil was discovered in the North Sea in the 70s, I believe. And Cognac had said, a black rain will bring riches to Aberdeen.
Oh, nice. That's pretty good.
Which it really did.
It did indeed.
A lot of people made a lot of money from North Sea oil.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of them living in Aberdeen, because that's where you sail from to go out to the rigs,
yep,
and work offshore. So it's pretty much just like Cognac said.
Yeah. That's pretty good. That's pretty good.
The last one I have,
mm-hmm,
is that Cognac predicted the creation of Scotland's Parliament.
Oh. Do tell.
At the time that he was alive, Scotland still had an independent monarchy.
Mm-hmm.
The Act of Union was 1707. So Scotland had its own king, but not its own Parliament.
Yes.
I don't think. Or not in the same way. Cognac was suggesting a completely independent parliament.
Mm-hmm.
And he said that it would happen when men could walk dry shod from England to France.
Oh, when the Channel Tunnel.
A little thing called the Channel Tunnel was built in 1994. You're as old as the Channel Tunnel.
I am. I mean, the Channel, just here vibing.
The first Scottish Parliament met for the first time in 1999. Now, if you weren't keeping track, 1999 is a lot later than 1877, and when Cognac was supposed to be on.
It's pretty good. It's pretty good.
So what do you think so far?
I mean, they're more compelling than I expected them to be. But I'm not compelled that he had second sight and things, because you could just predict enough things and you could probably make them fit into the truth eventually when you have the enormous expanse of time in front of you.
But could walk dry shod from England to France?
It's pretty good. It's pretty good.
Back in the 1600s?
The only thing I can think to compare is the guy, oh, whose name I've forgotten, obviously. He wrote Dilbert, the Dilbert comics.
Oh, no idea.
Dilbert creator. Scott Adams, who created the Dilbert comics. He's a bit mad, just generally, as creatives are. But he decided that he started to wonder if he had control of his own universe.
Okay.
Because he worked in an office, and then he decided he was going to be the world's greatest cartoonist one day. And he decided, and then he created Dilbert, and it became the most popular comic in the world. And he made a bunch of like other things he just decided then happened. He said, okay, like, let's do a test to see if I am actually master of my own reality. I predict that eventually, what was it he said? That it will be proved that the universe doesn't exist. I'm going to predict something so out there that it could never possibly happen. But if it does happen, I will know I am master of my own reality. And it was like 20 years later, they came up with the simulation theory that we're all just in a simulation and this isn't actually real. Which is a bit of a silly theory and not something you have to get into. But that proved that there is a theory that the universe isn't real and it's all just a simulation. So he is master of his own reality.
Wild.
Yeah. That was a bit hand-wavy from what I heard him say. But you know, so you can just say things. Because I don't think he's particularly master of the universe. Or that we're in a reality, in a simulation. That's what this reminds me of.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You can just make predictions, and if you wait long enough, they'll come true.
Yeah, it's a good theory.
Mm-hmm.
I find them kind of compelling. Get off Daddy's guitar! Get off! You can't play that. You've got his paw on the strings.
You can't do that.
Get off the guitar! They were further up a minute ago.
You're going to push it over. Get out of here.
It's not your footrest. He's unimpressed.
Dog trash my stuff, son of a bitch.
Well, I find the later prophecies particularly compelling.
Yeah, they're pretty good. They're pretty good.
The ones after the book was released.
Uh-huh.
I find them more convincing.
Yes.
Than the other ones.
I think so. I agree.
But I also think that, I might sound a bit hippy-dippy here, I don't know. I kind of think that having some kind of, I don't even want to call it psychic, but I feel like people naturally have an extra sense in the way that you kind of know when something isn't right, or if you get the feeling something bad is going to happen. I feel like that's a thing.
Fair.
So this kind of falls into that for me, that it could be completely natural. But I don't believe in every fortune teller.
Yeah.
Psychic reader. Like, I don't really believe in that. But I do believe that some people have a capacity for being more aware.
Yeah, I think so.
But I think it's a natural part of being human.
Yes.
Some people are just better at it. Like, some people have better eyesight.
Yeah. Some people have perfect pitch.
Exactly. 150.
With training.
But that's kind of how I feel. So I feel like I'm already biased coming into this.
Yeah.
Because that's what I think.
As am I. Because for me, it can just be a numbers game. And if there's no closing date to your prediction, then you haven't predicted wrong. It just hasn't come true yet. And that's 300 years later. So he might have made, per 100 predictions, one was correct. And then you just ignore the 99 that were wrong.
But they're so correct.
But it depends. Like if he was firing out, like cranking out 20 predictions a day for 30 years, that's a lot of predictions. Bound to hit a gem eventually.
I don't know.
I predict that this podcast is going to be a huge success.
You've said it, so it must be true.
It must be true.
Especially if you share this episode and share the podcast.
Tell your friends and
leave a comment and rate us. And
please help.
Just for you and the other ham sandwiches out there.
Woo!
We're now going to talk a little bit about the legitimacy of the prophecies, rather than ending the episode here being like, yep,
he's psychic.
I just lied. We're going to talk about the legitimacy of the prophecies a bit later.
Got it.
I'm so stressed. You don't even know.
Don't even know.
We are going to discuss that in a bit.
Well, what are we going to discuss now?
Well, at this point in our story, Konya kind of has it made, right?
Yeah.
He has incredible power.
Mm-hmm.
He can make prophecies. He can see the future.
He's got a cool stone.
Right. But this is the Generally Spooky podcast. Welcome. That's not how things go here.
No. Not least because, you know, it's 300 years later. He's not still alive.
No. So I predict something bad is about to happen. Konyek was working on the Bran estate, you remember.
Mm-hmm.
And this was owned by Kenneth Mackenzie, Lord Earl Seaforth, who I talked about earlier.
Mm-hmm.
I mentioned that he was a favourite at Charles II's court.
Mm.
And one of the perks of being a favourite was lots of female attention.
Ooh, scandalous.
Which he enjoyed, because it seems that Seaforth was a bit of a philanderer.
Oh, fornicator.
In the mid to late 1600s, Seaforth went to Paris for an extended period. An extended period.
For that dick.
No, that's not what he wanted.
Oh.
He wanted the other thing.
Oh, sorry.
You didn't get that at all.
No, I was like, what? I'm not going to go there.
Seaforth left, went to Paris for dodgy dealings, and he left his wife behind at Bran to keep everything running.
That's a good idea. If you're going to do lots of philandering, you don't want your wife there just being like, what are you up to? Nothing.
It's not nothing. I'm just doing taxes. I'm just staying over at my accountant's.
Yeah, I'm just going to visit my king.
Bye. So you can imagine how pleased she was with this.
I bet, yeah.
Now, Isabel hasn't been treated very kindly in the stories about Konyek. She, from what she does next, I would happily judge her for being a very cruel person. But in the stories, it said that she was considered one of the ugliest women in the country. Which is so mean.
Savage.
Like, judge someone on what they do, not what they look like.
No.
And she does some pretty terrible things, so.
Oh, no. Like,
judge her for that, but. you can't just say that.
She was a terrible person, and my God, was she ugly. Yeah, oh.
It's so unnecessary. Oh, okay. But she was thought to be very ugly.
Mm.
And her husband wasn't all that interested in her. Romantically. They had lots of children together, but it doesn't seem that he was attracted to her.
Mm.
So he went off to Paris.
Yep.
But Isabel was worried about her husband while he was away travelling. She missed him.
Yep.
And she wanted to know that he was okay. She had no way of really knowing, because presumably he's not answering the phone. She's dodging her calls.
No, oh no, let that go to voicemail.
Thank God I got caller ID. So Isabel decided to go to the one person that might be able to give her an honest answer.
Mm-hmm.
Coignach Orr.
To see what he could see.
To see what he could see,
Just because I'm fugly doesn't mean I don't have feelings.
Oh, it's just, it's so mean.
I know.
I don't like it.
What if you saw a picture of her though and you were just like, oh, fair.
No, it's still mean. But it's a story as old as time that when someone wants an honest answer and mm-hmm. they tell you they want an honest answer, there's a very real chance that they don't actually want an honest answer.
Yeah.
Right?
Absolutely. How do I look? Tell me the truth. I'm not going to tell you the truth.
Like, if I have just come off telling you that I feel really bloated, and then I ask you how I look in the outfit I've just put on, I don't want you to tell me I look bloated, you know? I want you to give me the honest answer, but like a little bit.
Yeah, but like not at all.
Like a little bit.
Not even a little
bit. As far as like, yep, you're wearing clothes, you know? But I don't want you to tell me I look rotund.
No. No. Do you think, or I wonder, wait, I was going to say, do you think, but you know what he's going to see. I wonder.
It's because I have second sight.
He looks through his wee stone to see what the king's up to. And he sees the king up to dirty deeds. Then he just gets really into it, like, oh man, I haven't been able to see yet. Just, can you leave for like 10 minutes?
It's also cloudy.
Yeah. So what do you see? Oh. What? Sorry, I wasn't paying attention. Pardon.
Well, this is kind of the situation Isabel was in. She wanted to go to Coignach
mm-hmm.
to hear that not only was her husband in perfect health, but that he missed her terribly and yep. was pining for her just like she was pining for him.
And not having sex with everything that moved.
Right? She doesn't want an honest answer. She wants to hear that he's okay and that he misses her.
Yes.
So she goes to Coignach. Coignach?
I've lost his name. I've forgotten.
Oh.
Coignach.
Coignach. Coignach. She went to him and she made her request. Tell me about my husband. Tell me everything's okay all the way over in Paris. Tell me that he's fine.
Yep.
So Coignach did what he was asked. He consulted the stone.
Mm-hmm.
He searched for Seaforth and he was able to see him.
Mm.
But Isabel definitely didn't want to know what everything that Coignach had seen.
Yeah. He saw some things, man.
So Coignach said, yep. Your husband is in perfect health. And he wouldn't say anymore. Now, news had gotten round that the Lady Seaforth herself had come to see Coignach. So there was a little bit of a crowd.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't private. And, you know, she had taken her very brief answer, but she started getting frustrated because she wanted more detail.
Mm-hmm.
Tell me how he is. Like, what do you see?
How is he? Fine. What do you see? Him?
Yeah. Coignach wouldn't tell her anything. He refused to tell her any more than he was in perfect health.
Yep.
And Isabel just became more and more and more enraged because she wanted to know. And it's that thing when someone refuses to tell you something, you start assuming the worst and you know something's up.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
And you have to remember, she's the lady of the manor. She has a lot of power.
Mm-hmm.
So eventually, Coignach had to cave.
Mm.
So he told her that her husband, in front of everybody, was spending time in Paris with his lover. And took great pains to point out that his lover was far more beautiful than her.
Well, that seems unreasonable, unnecessary.
Well, you see, by this time, Coignach was angry with Isabel for pushing and pushing and treating him with so much disrespect.
Pestering him.
She was being very forceful. So he went even further than just telling her about her husband's affair
mm-hmm.
in public in front of everyone. He revealed to Isabel the future demise of her family.
Ooh. That's a bold move.
So here's what he told her. The line of Seaforth will come to an end in sorrow. I see the last head of his house, both deaf and dumb. He will be the father of four fair sons, all of whom he will follow to the tomb. He will live careworn and die mourning, knowing that the honours of his line are to be extinguished forever, that no future chief of the Mackenzies shall bear rule at Bran or in Kintail.
Oofed! That's intense. Do you think... Always dangerous. That...
What, me thinking?
No, just whenever I say that, I normally have something stupid to say.
Oh, I think it was bad that I have thoughts. I was like, well, no. Fair, but you don't have to say it.
Do you think that he was just fucking a bit? Because he was annoyed. So he does have second sight, and he is making visions to whatever extent he is or is not, or he believes or whatever. But he also knows this, and he knows people believe that. So now and again, he just like throws out like a dud. Oh, it's not true. You're really pissing me off, so I'm just going to get you back.
He may have done it to some people.
Yeah.
But the last Mackenzie of Bran was Francis Mackenzie, who was deaf and dumb, had four sons that all died before him, and that was the end of the Mackenzie line at Bran.
That was the end of that. That was a matter of fact. Well, I guess that just null and voids my point. I'll just not say anything then.
You asked.
I did ask.
See? You didn't want an honest answer.
I wanted you to laugh at my joke.
And I mic dropped your ass.
Oh, I guess he could still have done that in general, though.
Yeah, absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
Just people annoying him.
Yeah.
So you are going to get a really big spot right here.
Right in your nose. Just like, yeah.
You are going to get the worst mouth ulcer right where you can just feel it. But, you know, that's a rough one to take.
That's tough.
Nobody's going to have a good time hearing that.
No.
But Isabel took it worse than most.
Not least Francis, if he's deaf.
Well, this was later.
No, just that Francis, he wouldn't have a good time hearing that. I'm just trolling you.
It's payback, isn't it? We're now in a cycle of revenge that neither of us can escape from.
That's our whole marriage.
Yay. Love romance.
Yeah.
Isabel's response to this news was murderous. She was firstly furious that Cognac had embarrassed her and her husband by speaking loudly about his affair.
Yes.
Because you made the point that even if Cognac had made it all up to annoy her, everyone believed that he was telling the truth.
Yes.
So they heard this about Seaforth and believed it.
Mm-hmm.
So he had ruined his reputation.
Yeah.
On top of that, Cognac had made the Mackenzies seem weak. Because he had predicted the end of their line.
Mm-hmm.
That they were no longer going to be in control of the lands that they were currently in.
Yeah.
And that was unforgivable.
Yep. Even just thinking that now everybody's heard it. But even if everybody knew, it's being the person who says it, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Like, you said the thing that was unspoken.
Well, he confirmed it.
Yeah. Yeah, everyone would have suspected. Some may have known, but some would only... they'd choose to not know, almost, for an easy life.
Just turn your head away.
Yeah.
So Isabel decided that Cognac had to be executed for what he had done. He'd gone too far, and she was livid. So Cognac was taken from Bran to a place called Shannonry Point, which we went to visit.
Yes, we did.
For this episode. It's very beautiful. It's a great dolphin spotting spot.
Yeah.
But that isn't what Cognac was taken there to do.
No. Showing some dolphins and giving a picnic?
No. No. He was sentenced to death. And the method of execution was for him to be submerged in a barrel of boiling tar. There's no gentle way for me to say that, so there you go.
That's so awful.
And in some stories, the barrel was also spiked.
That's what the plaque said that we saw.
Yeah, it varies. Because, you know, tar wasn't enough.
I know. I don't think tar was that old.
It might not be what we know it as.
Oh, that's true, eh? Not like tarmac tar.
No, but if it's similarly like thick and awful.
Yeah.
Here's what Alexander Mackenzie wrote in his book about Cognac's death. Lady Seaforth, Isabel, exultingly declared that, having had so much unhallowed intercourse with the unseen world, Cognac would never go to heaven. To his face.
What way to put it?
When he's about to die. Uh-huh. Arsehole. See, this is what you judge her for.
Yeah.
Not being conventionally, you know, unattractive.
A fugly ass bitch, if you will.
No. Stop it. But, you know, you judge someone based on something like this.
Absolutely.
But the seer, looking round upon her with an eye from which his impending fate had not banished the ray of a joyful hope of rest in a future state, gravely answered, "I will go to heaven, but you never shall. And this will be a sign whereby you can determine whether my condition after death is one of everlasting happiness or of eternal mystery.
Ooh.
A raven and a dove, swiftly flying in opposite directions, will meet, and for a second hover over my ashes, on which they will instantly alight. If the raven be foremost, you have spoken truly, but if the dove, then my hope is well founded."
Bold.
So what he's saying there is that after he has burned into little pieces,
yep,
a raven and a dove are going to fly over his used-to-be body.
Mm-hmm.
And whichever one lands on his ashes first dictates whether he's gone to heaven or not.
Very nice, very nice.
Thus proving Isabel right or wrong.
Yeah.
In front of everyone.
I like it. That's going out in style.
I mean, you know, it's about to happen.
Yep.
Might as well cause as much carnage as you can.
And everyone's sitting there waiting like, there's a caterpillar on it. What does that mean?
Someone dropped their newspaper. The ashes have blown away. Just after Cognac's death, just as he had predicted, a dove and a raven did fly overhead.
Hmm.
And it was the dove that landed on his ashes.
Oh, very nice.
Proving his point and proving that Isabel was wrong, even after his death.
Yay. Well, that's nice, I guess.
Yeah, that's the legend, the myth of Cognac. But you, Kieran, personally, you know. Hello. What I'm like. I can't leave it at that.
Naturally.
I have to try and verify any part I can to try and find some truth in what's being said.
You do like that?
I have to. I can't just sit with it. I have to explore it. So I looked into some things to see what I could determine. And a lot has been said about whether or not there's any truth to Cognac Or. It's a big debate.
In his existence.
Mm-hmm. Existence and whether or not the prophecies are actually true.
Okay.
Firstly, there is no documentation that Cognac existed.
What?
At least not in the 1600s.
Ooh. So.
That's exactly the reaction I wanted. Let me explain.
Okay.
A cognac or was written about in parliamentary records from 1577.
Okay.
So a lot earlier than Alexander Mackenzie had said in his book.
Uh-huh.
And there's an interesting story attached to this cognac or.
Mm-hmm.
A woman called Catherine Ross married a wealthy landowner called Robert Moore Monroe of Fowles Storehouse, the cafe where we've been, near Dingwall. Catherine was his second wife. He already had 6 children when they got married, and then they had 6 more together.
Mm-hmm.
And this is all true. This is written, recorded fact.
12 children.
Catherine was very ambitious and kind of the classic fairy tale evil stepmother. Seriously. She didn't want Robert's children with his first wife to inherit anything from their father. She wanted to make sure that her own children were taken care of and that they would get their father's money and his titles when he died.
Oh, man.
Selfish. They're all his children.
Yeah.
They should get things equally.
Absolutely.
But I'm assuming her issue was all of his children with his first wife were older than his children with her.
Yeah.
So they would inherit first.
Oh, yeah.
With that hierarchy.
So
what's a woman to do? What are her options? Obviously, bodily harm and murder.
Naturally, where I thought it was going
to
go.
She wanted to kill her stepchildren.
Oh.
So that her own children didn't miss out.
so selfless.
And she decided the best way to do this was by consulting with witches and warlocks.
You know, people say, like, who's going to think of the children? This is what happens when you think of the children. I'm just thinking of my children. So I have to,
your children, so I have not to the children.
Murder those other children.
And it seems, I couldn't exactly tell what she did, but she was partially successful.
Oh, no.
Was what I saw. So she, I think she killed at least some of them. Now, there was a warrant issued all the way from Edinburgh,
mm-hmm.
which was calling for the arrest of 26 women and 6 men on charges of diabolical practices of magic,
mm-hmm.
enchantment, murder, homicide, and other offences.
Jeez-o.
Which suggests to me that at least one or more were dead.
Yes. Fuck.
But one of the men who was in the warrant was called Conaoch Orr.
Interesting.
He was referred to as a warlock,
mm.
an enchanter. Enchanter. Some of the people who were listed in this warrant were executed for witchcraft and were executed at Shannonry Point
mm.
for this crime. But it isn't clear if Conaoch was one of them.
Interesting.
So we're not really sure what happened to him, because not all of them were executed.
Yeah.
Catherine was annoyingly lucky, because her husband, who is a fool, supported her and took her away to Caithness for her own safety after what she had done to his children and his family. He protected her.
Bold.
But he died before she did.
Mm-hmm.
And when he died and she wasn't under his protection anymore, she was brought to trial for what she had done. And then she was acquitted.
Ugh.
I'm assuming because she was wealthy.
Yeah.
I also saw that she tried to murder one of the noble ladies who lived at Cotter Castle.
Oh, what?
Here. So that Catherine's brother, who was married to her, was free to marry someone else.
Mm.
But that's too much of a tangent for today. But I just wanted to make the link that there was a Conaoch Orr who was an enchanter who was in this warrant.
Yeah, that's really interesting.
But it was in the 1500s, mm. not the 1600s.
I'm more inclined to believe that the Bran Seer did exist. Maybe yeah. even in the 1600s than other stories. And I don't know why. I just feel like it's got more basis.
I do too. That's the weird thing.
Yeah.
I think it's because records are so patchy in the Highlands.
Yeah.
I well believe that someone existed, but there was no documentation.
Mm-hmm.
The argument directly against that, though, is that there's no official documentation, which was fairly common.
Mm-hmm.
But there are other documents that exist from the time that make no mention of him at all. Like, there's a diary that was found that belonged to a minister
oh, yeah.
of a nearby parish. And basically the argument is that this minister was really bitchy and really gossipy. And he wrote about everyone who was accused of witchcraft and executed in, like, in a really gossipy way. So if Conaoch existed, and then if he was executed in that fashion, this minister would have written about
all over it.
But he wrote nothing.
That's hilarious and compelling.
Right? They're not wrong. That's... He probably would have.
Oh, bitch, what have I got for you today? Into his diary.
And yeah, like, I'm paraphrasing, like, a bit. But that's effectively what they were saying.
Yeah.
He wrote about people in a really mean way. And he liked to gossip. So...
That's hilarious.
If Conaoch did exist, it means that his prophecies and his legend was told orally from person to person for 200 years before Alexander Mackenzie wrote it down.
Yeah.
Which is the tricky part.
That's a lot of room for interpretation.
And one of the things that I did some research into was that at this time, Conaoch, his prophecies would have been recorded or spoken in Gaelic.
Oh, yeah.
To then be translated.
Mm.
And that poses a real problem because you're kind of at the mercy of the translator.
Mm-hmm.
If they don't understand fully what you mean, they might paraphrase
mm-hmm.
into something that they understand. And I read a bit about this because I looked into Nostradamus, who was a seer.
Okay.
From France.
Mm-hmm.
I think France. I didn't look into him too far. But one of the issues, he made loads of predictions over his lifetime,
mm-hmm.
but they were translated later because he wrote them in, like, several different languages. So they're subject to the translation. rather than his original words.
Interesting.
Which is similar to Conyhor, if you're speaking Gaelic.
Mm-hmm. Conspiracy theory. Maybe Alexander Mackenzie is a seer and a prophesizer, but he needed a cover because no one would believe it if he just started making all these prophecies.
It is compelling.
So he invented the Conyhor and the travelling around, or maybe he actually did it, but then he was actually writing down all his prophecies and he wanted a more effective way to keep them going.
If he was prophesizing in 1877, mm-hmm. he would probably be considered unwell. Although there was the spiritualist movement. We talked about that with Helen Duncan.
Yep.
That it was a thing.
That was a little while later, I think.
It was, yeah, 50 but...
50 years.
I think the late 1800s,
yep.
there was also a bit of that, like seances and all that jazz. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it seems unlikely, just a funny thought.
But it's tricky.
Because yeah.
if you're telling stories in Gaelic, you don't write them down. So that does explain some of the gap.
Yeah, it would cause problems.
But people who are sceptical that Conyhor existed claim either that Alexander Mackenzie did hear about Conyhor's predictions, he was real, but he tweaked the predictions that had already kind of happened.
That's what I thought earlier.
Exactly. Yeah. That's one of the things people say. He tweaked the ones that had happened before 1877 mm-hmm. so that they fit very minutely.
Yeah.
They were very specific, whereas later ones were left kind of vague, which would make it easier, like you were saying, to fit anything.
Mm-hmm.
Well, not anything, but a wider range of things.
Yeah.
But the second theory is that Alexander made the whole thing up.
Yeah.
That Konya never existed.
Mm-hmm. Could happen. Because I suppose like the sailing round the back of Tomnahurich Hill, it could have been that the canal was never built, but then the giant wind turbines that get trucked past, you know, they kind of look like big sails. Maybe one of them drives around the back and then you could be like, oh, there it is. That's the giant wind sail that's coming around the back of the mountain.
It's tricky.
Interesting.
So a couple of different theories at Alexander's expense
mm-hmm.
for what might have happened. But it still doesn't explain the ones that seem to have come true after he wrote the book.
Yeah.
It's bizarre, but I'm leaning more towards Conyhor existing.
Yeah, I am
I
too.
I have the same thing that you do.
I'm not entirely sure why.
Me neither.
Because to have a court wizard, well, like there's the alchemist at Stirling Castle.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like they would have kept a seer on side just to hang out, make predictions.
Well, see, part of it for me is that maybe not everything he experienced or foresaw was written down, because having second sight was fairly common.
Maybe, yeah.
So it's a bigger part of everyday life
mm-hmm.
than you sort of give credit for.
Yeah. And how would it, like, if you were kind of living more in the moment and day to day because you didn't think too far into the future, you wouldn't really care if that when someone walked dry shorn from England to France, I forgot the rest of it, but that's like, oh, well, what does that mean? It doesn't really mean anything.
Yeah.
Who cares? That doesn't help me with my sheep or this year's crop.
Yeah, I have
crop.
To survive until tomorrow, yeah. So I don't really care about this.
I need to know how severe winter is going to be, or if my wife's going to make it through childbirth.
Yeah.
Or if my husband's fooling around while he's in France.
Don't ask that. Don't ask.
I know he's dicking about, but is he dicking about? He's dicking about. What the fuck? How could you say that to me?
In 1737, all the parish records of Rosemarkey, which is like that area that includes Shannonry Point,
mm-hmm.
they were all destroyed because the home that all the records were kept in, and these included some historical records, I think, burned down.
That pesky fire, it's ruining all of history's greatest mm-hmm. records.
Oh, it's very common.
Yeah.
It's your only source of heat. Everyone had one. But yet, all the parish records for that area were destroyed. So there's a chance maybe his existence was recorded in these records.
Maybe.
And the place burned down.
Uh-huh.
They didn't have them anymore.
Yeah.
What is true, though, is that Conyhor had a big influence on the local area and has had effects that have made it into reality.
Yeah.
There's a stone placed at the end of Shannonry Point that commemorates his legend,
mm-hmm.
since that's the place of his supposed execution.
We want to see it. It's pretty cool.
It is there. But there are also other things that have happened in real life as a result of hearing the prophecies that he supposedly made. In 1978, the Highland Council actually altered and sort of delayed their plans so that they wouldn't bring about one of Conaoch's prophecies.
Really?
They planned to build another bridge across the river in town, since even back then they were struggling with traffic congestion.
Mm-hmm.
That was the reason given, which I think is hilarious because it's been a problem since then up until now. But the council received a phone call from a local concerned citizen warning them about Conaoch's prophecy, because apparently he had warned when 7 bridges crossed the river,
mm-hmm.
so not 5 and not 9, which we've talked about, then there would be destruction for the town by fire and water and the fall of black rain.
Mm.
Now, the councillors laughed it off initially when they were talking about it, because it was ridiculous, getting a phone call, like, what a stupid thing to phone in about, until someone pointed out that the reason for the prophecy could be a disaster involving Dunray power plant. And that would explain the black rain that Conaoch was discussing.
Ooh.
That it would be nuclear fallout.
That wouldn't be so weird.
No, so they actually held off building the bridge, and apparently even looked into how much it would cost to tunnel under the river instead.
Wow. That's bananas.
Yeah, they didn't do that. There is no tunnel. But someone phoned in and told them that, and then they actually had to consider what they were going to do.
That seems mental.
So that's real. That's a real effect.
I can just imagine me sitting there and all us ham sandwiches, that one ham sandwich of the meat being like, what is everyone talking about? Of course we're still going to build the bridge. Build the bridge.
Stop it. Stop it.
No, but like, what if we do that and this power plant explodes? Well, why would that happen? Like, that's a nothing statement. If we did that, that would be really terrible. But, you know, the two are not connected. As long as you're not drilling in your foundation, slip and drill into the power plant, I'm sure it'll be fine. Miles away.
Yeah, yeah. But that was what they thought. They were kind of retrofitting it into prophecy.
Mental.
Trying to figure out what it could be, and then when they found something, it worried them.
Mm.
And obviously we've already discussed that apparently there are 9 bridges now crossing the River Ness, and Inverness is still there.
It is.
Finally, there's a Pictish stone near Strathpeffer, and it's called the Eagle Stone. Mm-hmm. It's amazing. It looks really cool. If covered in carvings, very old. One of Conaoch's prophecies said that if the Eagle Stone fell 3 times, then one of the local lochs, Loch Oosey, which I mentioned, would flood so high that ships would be able to sail to Strathpeffer.
Ooh, that's pretty cool.
Which is ominous because Strathpeffer is not particularly near the coast.
No, it's very inland.
Yeah. The Eagle Stone fell once.
Yep.
Then it fell twice.
Oh.
So we've only got one fall left.
Did they just remove it?
To stop the prediction from coming true, the Eagle Stone has been concreted into the ground.
Damn.
And it was done very subtly and discreetly, so it would never fall down, but nobody made a big deal that they actually believed the prophecy. It was just kind of done, and there's a lot of growth over the concrete that kind of covers it up.
That's bizarre.
Because nobody wanted to be seen to believe it.
No.
But to stop it from falling down a third time, they concreted this Pictish stone into the ground.
Mental. You could totally cover up as health and safety too.
Yeah.
What if it fell on top of someone? That would be disastrous. It's
already fallen twice.
Like, it could happen again. Like, oh shit, we should do something about that. Haha, I'll make sure that loch doesn't flood to the ocean.
And speaking of Loch Oosey,
mm-hmm.
that's apparently where Conaoch threw his hagstone.
Ooh.
When he found out he was going to be arrested by Lady Seaforth. The legend goes that he threw it into the loch, where it remains, and it's waiting for someone to find it.
Very cool.
And that is the really cool story of Conaoch Or.
That was a really cool story. That was a really cool story. I wonder if he heard that the Lady Seaforth boasting that she was going to take his stone, so he was all like, see this, and then threw it into the loch.
Maybe.
Maybe.
What do you think, ham sandwich?
I liked it. That's a very good story from origin to... One of the bits that didn't get addressed is how casually his mum just talked to all these ghosts.
Yeah. It's that thing. Yeah. If you're in the Highlands, and the islands, they have their own superstitions. Uh-huh. Like, do you know how many superstitions and legends are from Orkney and Shetland?
Yeah.
It's just that thing where... Yeah, of course she did. It's just... Yeah. Just happens sometimes, and you just have to get on with it.
Well, yeah, and then she was walking through this graveyard, all the ghosts go home. She's just like, dawn soon. That makes sense. Or, must be dawn soon. All the ghosts are going home. I'll just carry on walking.
Which kind of feeds into my belief, where I think there is part of us that's just, it's just an unnatural part of who humans are and what makes us us.
Yeah. It's just a story. You just get into the story.
Yeah.
Well, I thoroughly enjoyed that.
I wasn't sure if you would, because I worried, especially with your reaction to, like, the beginning, with the prophecies, that you would just be like, nope, next.
I did wonder if I was going to do that, but no, I liked them. They were just ominous enough to be like, ooh,
well,
spooky.
I think because there's still a question mark.
Yeah.
That's the big thing. Over every single part of the story, there's a question mark. Whether he existed. Did he exist when we think he did? Was it all made up? How could they have made it all up?
Yeah. What's that thing you can't prove nor disprove?
Exactly. And I think that's why people are still attached to it, and it's still talked about a lot. If you look up, like, Highland legends,
yeah,
I imagine you'll come across this fairly quickly, because it's a very famous story.
It's a big one.
And you can visit Bran House.
Oh, yeah.
There's no longer a castle, but you can visit the house.
That's fun.
It's still there. And you can visit Shannonry Point, like we did.
We did. It's
you
a good time.
You can go to Lochusie. You can visit Strathpeffer. It's all in our area.
Do a whole Highland tour.
Mm-hmm. Spooky tour.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I hope you enjoyed it, if you're listening.
I enjoyed it.
I was very excited to tell you the story.
I'm sad there's only two episodes left of the season.
I know. Can you believe it?
No.
Episode 8.
It's flown in.
It really has.
Crazy.
The time's really gotten away from me. I can't believe that we started the season 2 months ago.
I know. Doesn't make sense.
At the end of the season, we will be taking, like, a break. We take breaks between seasons.
Yep.
Just so I have time to get my shit together. But there will be a mini-series, like we said.
Yes.
But we'll come up with a date before the end of this season.
Yeah, maybe next week. Maybe
so
the week
you have
after.
Something to look forward to.
Yes, from your favourite spooky duo.
Imagine if we are someone's favourite.
That'd be weird, wouldn't it?
Yeah. Like a favourite podcast.
Favourite podcast, Generally Spooky Podcast. It's my favourite podcast.
Aww.
I listen to it every week.
Aww.
While I'm editing it.
You're like a groupie. You're involved in everything.
Spooky. Well, we shall see you later.
Yes, we are about to record a wee blether for Patreon.
Yes, we are.
So if you aren't over there, you're missing out.
Yeah.
Big time.
Big time. It's good time.
But we will speak to you next week.
We will. Bye.
Bye.